Welcome to Healthcare and Hire, a podcast for healthcare professionals and aspiring healthcare executives looking for information, association, and inspiration from higher-level leaders across the healthcare industry. I'm Iqbal Acha, career consultant, healthcare recruiter, and registered pharmacist. Every week, I sit down to interview healthcare executives, clinical leaders, medical entrepreneurs, and industry experts to learn how they got to where they are today, what they see as the future of healthcare, and what they're doing to make healthcare more accessible, affordable, and effective. Let's find out more about today's guest. Dr. Amy Gutierrez is the Vice President and Chief Pharmacy Officer for UC Health. She oversees pharmacy practice, strategy, and policy across this large Colorado healthcare system. Dr. Gutierrez is passionate about leading strategies to improve medication access, outcomes, as well as leveraging the value of pharmacists to drive improved health. Previously, she served as the Senior Vice President and Chief Pharmacy Officer for Kaiser Permanente's National Pharmacy Program, where she led national strategies across all 8 U.S. geographical regions. Dr. Gutierrez has also served as the Chief Pharmacy Officer for the Los Angeles County Department of Health Services, the second largest public health system in the United States. Dr. Gutierrez obtained her Doctor of Pharmacy degree from the University of Southern California School of Pharmacy. She is a California Healthcare Leadership Fellow and has completed the Executive Leadership Program at Harvard University's Business School. Hello, Dr. Gutierrez, and welcome to the Healthcare and Hire podcast.
Good afternoon. It's great to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. What's it like in Colorado?
It is. We just got a big snowstorm. So imagine being in, driving to work today. There was snow all over the place, slick weather. So I'm a recent transplant to Colorado. I've been here for 2 years, still getting used to the snow and the cold weather, but actually enjoying it. It's an amazing place to live.
I've had the opportunity to visit Colorado several times. It is absolutely gorgeous. And I'm not sure if your fascination with Colorado will change once you cross a certain length of time when you're there as a resident. But as a visitor, I would go back in a heartbeat. Anyway, Dr. Amy, I'm very glad to have you on the show today. I know many of my listeners today are meeting you for the first time. Why don't we take this opportunity and have you formally introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are, what your role is, and how do you help take healthcare to a higher level?
I am the current Vice President and Chief Pharmacy Officer for UC Health Healthcare System, which is the largest healthcare provider in Colorado. It's affiliated with the University of Colorado School of Medicine. So it's a tertiary care center. So there's a lot of care that happens here that probably can't happen anywhere else. So a lot of patients get referred here, not only from Colorado, but throughout the country, because there's so many areas that we specialize in. And in my role, I was brought here. I've been here for 2 years. And I'm actually the first person that is in this role. So it's a new role that was created. So as the vice president for pharmacy, I am bringing the whole system together. So taking all of our 12 hospitals and the leaders that are in every different hospital area, bringing everyone together to create one organization. And I oversee medication management, our pharmacy and therapeutics committee, which has our formulary and oversight of all of the ambulatory, clinical, infusion, hospital, anywhere medications are used, I'm involved.
That's incredible. And the history of UC Health is pretty short, right? Like when you compare it to other organizations, but it has done a lot in the 10 years that it's been around. So I know that UC Health was actually a merger between, as you mentioned, University of Colorado Hospitals and is it Poudre Valley or Poudre Valley.
Poudre Valley, yes.
So Poudre Valley Health System. That happened in 2012. You have 12 health systems, or you have 12 hospitals today that are spread out between Colorado, Wyoming, and Nebraska. And you have, like, I believe, 29,000 employees that are working in these different locations. I mean, there is so much about UC Health that I think most people may or may not be aware of. I know that it's been ranked as one of America's top hospitals by several times by U.S. World News and Report. It's been named the number one employer in Colorado by Forbes, and it was also a first place winner in Healthcare Innovation Innovators Awards program in 2021. There are a lot of things that happen, especially when you talk about integrating a variety, a number of, you know, different health systems and the culture and just a variety of different processes. So though the responsibility that you have is, to be very honest with you, Amy, it's not enviable for me. I cannot imagine the sleepless nights that you must have trying to figure out, like, how to get everybody on board. And I'm sure that's where we'll want to talk a little bit about some of the great challenges and some of the successes that you see being in this role that was newly created for the sake of integration and for process improvement. Amy, tell me a little bit about, you know, some of the things that you've experienced while you've been here, right? You've come from a long history of great leadership roles, which we will talk about soon. But then now walking into this location, especially not having been a Colorado resident, like, you've had to sort of, like, be thrown into the mix with, like, hey, okay, Amy, here you go, solve this problem. What's probably been the biggest challenge that you've seen and that you and your team have been able to work on, and maybe a recent success that you'd like to share with the audience today when it comes to some of the things that you've had to been given exposure to?
That's a great question. And a lot of what drives me and what excites me about jobs is just the innovation part. So to be an innovator, to make a positive impact, to say that I've left a position in a much better place than it was before, that is what actually I came here to do. So I was brought in as a disruptor to try to bring everyone together on the same page and actually rowing in the same direction. So one of the biggest challenges I found was just the fact that there really was a lack of leadership at the system level. It was everybody was doing their own thing, rowing in different directions. So I've got to put everybody on that boat. I've got everyone have their oars out and have to, and part of it's a selling job. You have to sell the benefits of that because they've never had that before. So when they start seeing the benefits and the way that, hey, you know, pharmacy's at the table now, we actually have a leadership role at the table. I present to our senior executive group every 3 months on some of the initiatives that we're driving and where we are and our progress. And it's just exciting to see over time. I recently did a slide in a presentation to our group about all the differences from when I first got here. And it's been 2 years in. So the ability and to see all the positive improvement and changes that have happened in those 2 years is just really exciting to me. And to me, it's about the people, the leaders. I have a young leadership team. So being able to get them to that next level and mentoring them is another part of my role that it really is exciting to me.
I think that that's phenomenal. And to know that you've been able to kind of, like, right the ship with people on board, it's not an easy task for anyone, you know, and I think that it's important to recognize, like, you know, when you're brought in, as you pointed out very eloquently, by the way, as a disruptor. That's why most leaders are brought in, is to be able to shake up the status quo of malaise and this idea of, like, you know, what does it matter? You know, there's always, like, this general feeling of apathy. But then when you have somebody that can come in and really rally the troops and unite them and move them in one direction, it takes a certain level of courage and it takes a certain level of leadership in that space. You know, having the opportunity to be able to look at 12 different hospitals plus other facilities where medication is being dispensed, right? Like, I'm sure that there were some locations that maybe had an element of their process which was like, wow, why is this not being replicated everywhere across the system? And others that were very reluctant to adopt that. Maybe you can share with us a little bit about one of their biggest aha moments that you were able to impart with your team, and talk a little bit about your team as well. I'm sure that you've been able to mention that you've got a young leadership group. It'll be fascinating to understand if you were able to design your leadership group and were you able to reorganize the entire pharmacy leadership chain, and then help us understand, like, what were some of the tools or tactics that you were able to implement to be able to help the entire pharmacy staff and the entire UC Health medical staff recognize, hey, this is valuable for us and we need to shift our mindsets.
Well, pharmacies changed a lot. So I think one of the things coming in here is that there was this old-fashioned way of thinking about what pharmacists do and the value that they provide to patients, because that's what we're all really here for, is to improve care to patients. And also being a young health system, we have a lot of new acquisitions and people have just been doing things a certain way for so long. So it wasn't like coming into an established organization. So that brought its own challenges, but I have an amazing leadership team that, and it's very, I think one of the biggest changes was getting a shift from being geographically focused to focusing as a system from a functional level. So if you think about pharmacy, we not only have hospital pharmacy, we run infusion pharmacies, which has its own oversight. And then we have retail pharmacies. So we're one of the biggest providers of outpatient medication, especially on the specialty side. We run our own specialty pharmacy that is very focused on those really critically ill patients. And having the ability to have people think differently, like I'm not in the North region. We have the North region, we have the South region, then we have the Metro region. So that's how the system's divided into three. Mm-hmm. And it was previously the director of the North region oversaw all the lines of business for his region. Mm-hmm. And now I brought in a leadership team, new leaders that actually are running more of the functional lines of business. So for example, on our retail pharmacy side, we operate 17 retail pharmacies, had a 33% growth over the last year. So huge growth. And how are we managing the how are the efficiencies? How are we providing the optimal care? How do we provide? And with retail, it's about patient experience.
Yeah.
So how are you going to? Because you want those patients to experience a positive atmosphere within our location so that they come back. Because patients have choice. So it's always about what can you do. So one of the things we did is we revised how we manage our patient feedback. So we actually start comparing ourselves to the outside industry. So who are our competitors? That hadn't been done before. So we actually participated with a national leading organization that monitors that. And we're asking the same questions that they do. So we can actually rank now how we're doing versus our competitors on the outside. We provide a lot of, I don't know if you've been in retail pharmacies, having the ability to open at night. If I was actually just looking in our Denver metro area, how many pharmacies are open 24 hours? That number has actually really reduced.
Yes.
We provide 24-hour services in our locations to patients that come. So we actually are trying to go a level above. We do mail delivery services. We're soon going to hopefully start same-day delivery services for patients. And I think with what's happened with COVID, perceptions of customers and patients have changed. So it's about convenience. It's about being able to provide the optimal experience. So I actually monitor a lot of the experience results. I get copies of them, how the patients, the feedback they give us, and I can track and trend. We look at global data, but I like to read some of the comments. And then when I had, like I just had one last week where a patient said, you know, my pharmacist in my at this one location just did an exemplary job. I'm always going to return there and just reach out to them and say, hey, you know what? I noticed. And this is something that we really appreciate you and all that you're doing, because that's what UC Health, that's what they look for, our patients. And it actually speaks to the brand and the name of our pharmacy. And that's how we grow our business, is by doing that. We want to be the location of choice and the healthcare system of choice for anybody that lives in Colorado.
Amy, I love the holistic approach that you have, right? Like, especially when you think about, you know, how the mindset of everybody swims in their own lane used to be the traditional way. And now we are operating in a way where we say, listen, our patient is centric to everything that we do. And it's not that they just come into the hospital and then they leave and we never see them again and they go somewhere else. We need to make sure that they're getting the best service possible in every facet, whether they're an inpatient, outpatient, you know, or even in transition between two locations. We should be able to have eyes on them and provide them the care that they need in a way that is, you know, remarkably memorable. And I love how you've been able to dig in, especially rally, you know, really motivate other employees by giving them that simple shout out. It's not a lot, right? But when you have it, you suddenly feel like you're walking on clouds because somebody recognized the work that you do. And I appreciate that a lot. Amy, you know, when you, you know, again, we'll talk about your career momentarily, but I know that you and I have seen pharmacy go through many iterations. Many of it was ushered in at a very faster clip or a faster rate because of COVID. And now we're operating in a very different type of industry where pharmacy is leading rather than following. Pharmacy is also changing and breaking down a lot of barriers. And sometimes when I think about the professionals that, you know, represent our profession, I do see that there are many of them who are wondering, you know, what skill sets today are still applicable and what skill sets are missing in order to be able to stay up with how pharmacy is shifting. I'd love to understand from your perspective what you feel has changed maybe in the last 3 or 5 years of pharmacy, and then what skills are desperately needed for the listeners of audiences today to say, hey, it's not on my belt today. I don't have this, but maybe I should start approaching this as an upskilling opportunity.
That's a great question. In pharmacy, I mean, I've been in pharmacy for a long time, but in terms of the last few years, what I think has happened over time, pharmacists' value in terms of our expertise on medications has really been highlighted, and we're able to participate more in patients' outcomes and making sure patients get what they need from medication management. So I think that's been going on for many years. But I think the last few years, what I've seen is what's COVID's done is it's basically about how the pharmacy profession actually stepped up. So if you think about how COVID vaccines were provided, COVID testing that's occurred, some of the medications like the Paxlovid, which is a big medication that's being used for, we stepped up, pharmacy stepped up, they were available in pharmacies. Even the president actually changed laws to allow for us to start prescribing it. So I think there's just a lot of different changes that COVID, the silver lining of COVID is the ability for us to really start proving our value of what we've always known we could do, but do it to a greater scale. I think the other thing that COVID has brought us is the ability to do remote practice. So the ability, if you think about having to place a pharmacist, for example, on the ambulatory clinic side, in every single clinic, sometimes that scale is really difficult to do when you really need to look at high-risk patients. So how do you modify track data so that you can ensure that your high-risk patients get the benefit of that patient, of that pharmacist interaction and the pharmacist support? Because if you think about the whole patient journey, they get diagnosed, they get their labs, they get their radiology, their last stop is their medication. And a lot of times for chronic care, medication therapy is the most effective and often the most cost-effective way to treat disease. So if we've done all that work and then the patient doesn't take their meds, mm-hmm. or they have drug interactions, or they're not on the appropriate dose, all of that impacts the patient's outcome. So I think that the value and the pharmacist being at the table to be part of a medication management expert, because I don't think it's just about pharmacy, it's about managing medication therapy. And that is the whole gamut from prescribing to dispensing and even administration. We are experts in that field, and we need to lean in and partner at the table with every one of our colleagues and our peers in that field and just really start focusing on what makes the most sense for patients and how do we provide value by being active participants rather than being in the pharmacy counter, behind the counter and dispensing and labeling medications. So I think the role has really expanded, and COVID's, I think, just highlighted it and actually had an ability to have that happen faster.
I love that. And I love how you frame our professions in the sense of we're no longer asking to be at the table, right? We literally have been given the seat by everyone around us because they recognize, you know, where our expertise is and how we can, you know, really make a difference in patient outcomes. I do find, however, that some of our professional colleagues, you know, struggle with that mindset. And so sometimes they may say, well, you know, how do I prove myself? And maybe there is even a point where they have a seat at the table, but they're looking to be able to say, well, what is it that I'm missing here when I talk to my professional colleagues or my patients that I'm not able to influence them well enough so that they understand the background of the situation or the value or the importance of this? You know, have there been certain learning modules or certain resources that you would say have been essential or critical in helping teach either your leadership team or others that you've encountered along the way to help them overcome that, maybe that hill that they see as a challenge for themselves to really take hold of that position that's already been presented?
A lot of it, I think, it is honestly about being curious and being a forever learner. So I consider myself continually learning, and how do I be a better leader? Because I think part of us, whether you're a clinical pharmacist discussing therapy with a patient, or you're a leader, a chief pharmacy officer, just as I am, it's all about how do you lead and how do you continually develop your leadership skills so you get to that point where you can be really effective. And part of it too is selling. I mean, you've got to know how to sell the success stories and to talk about all the benefits that that pharmacists are providing to patients. I've had the fortune of being involved in quite a few leadership courses along my career. I was one of the original fellows of the California Healthcare Foundation, which was a great, it's a way for the state of California to devote resources to help develop healthcare leaders. Because if you think of those that went to pharmacy school or medical school or nursing school, et cetera, you don't really necessarily get leadership training. I mean, I could be a really good pharmacist and I could really know my clinical pharmacy aspects and I know how to use a drug, but that leadership ability comes after you graduate and after you go to school or you take classes, get exposed, and also utilize your leadership. And again, that could be as a frontline pharmacist using leadership. I don't think you have to be a formal leader to really influence others. And that I've also had the ability to go. I went to the Harvard University School of Business and I took a course. It's a healthcare executive leadership course. I'm always looking for ways to help improve my ability to lead and influence. That's, I think, part of it too is about influencing. And that's not a formal leadership. It's more an informal leadership skill that you need to learn to be able to do that, especially with peers. The other thing is the American Society of Health System Pharmacists has a new program called Certified Pharmacy Executive Leader. I was very fortunate to be part of the first cohort in terms of identifying. It's a capstone program, so pharmacists can attend and they can get a certificate that actually identifies us as executive leaders, and we have to do annual recertification. And it's a way of really recognizing the leadership skills in the pharmacy profession and hopefully get new leaders on board so that we can start perpetuating that for the whole profession. So to me, I'm really excited about leadership and ability to influence others and mentor new leaders. So anything in that vein is really what drives me.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why we invited you on the show, right? Because we see the passion, and I saw the passion in that, and I really wanted to have an opportunity for you to share some of the journey that you've taken and one of the reasons why it brings you to where you are today and how you can help others in that space. Amy, as you look at pharmacy today, right, 2023, one quarter down, we're just right about to start quarter two. You know, there's so many things that are coming at us from a pharmacy legislation perspective, you know, from a business perspective, from a talent pipeline perspective, from a problem, you know, from a clinical perspective. You know, when I ask, you know, this question, I ask you to kind of share not just from your perspective in terms of what you've experienced here at UC Health, but also in conversations with other maybe chief pharmacy officers as well. And when you think about what's coming down the pike in 2 or 3 years that's either going to shift the way that you're operating today or to fortify some of the resources that you have, what are some of the things that you and your colleagues have talked about that should cause healthcare professionals and executives to take notice, to be ready for whatever 2025, 2026 brings?
I think the rising cost of medication is huge. And I think as we're feeling a lot of financial pressures on the healthcare market currently, and I think it's going to continue into the future. The pivot to value-based care, to basically show that you're providing value. Like I stated, you can go through all the steps of getting a patient treated, but if they don't take their medication, if they're not supported at that medication, are your diabetic patients taking their statins? Are they adherent? You could do all this work as an insurer. And I think the payers are actually becoming a lot more intelligent about it and saying, hey, I'm funding all this rising cost, but what am I getting out of it? And it's about patient outcomes. So I think it's a focus on what are we doing that is going to drive the outcomes. And a lot of it is going to involve probably analytics, identifying your high-risk patients, having a way to really fine-tune your leadership skills to get the attention and get the focus placed on those patients that really need those outcomes. If you look at your total patient population, your top risk is probably 20%. Mm-hmm. And how are you going? It's that whole 80-20 rule. How are you going to put the resources to start addressing that? I think the other factor is we're becoming a lot more automated. So the days of having medication, I think in the future, may not be in 5 years, but I think eventually we're probably going to get into an automated fashion with pharmacy. Think about the fact that you could go pick up cash at any ATM, but you've got to go to a pharmacy, and that pharmacy has to be open to be able to get your medication. So providing access to patients after hours to critical medications so they can start therapy sooner. I think the technology eventually will get to the point where we will have automated, more automation that will provide care. And then that leaves us as pharmacists. It's no longer about labeling that medication. It's now about providing the value, which is, I think, what we went to school for, is how do we utilize our expertise to ensure that patients get medication appropriately. You've got new therapies coming out. Gene therapy is coming out, which is very, I mean, I was reading, there's actually a therapy that's coming out for sickle cell that is actually going to cure sickle cell and basically replace the patient's cells with new ones. Wow. And that is right around the corner. So the technology that's happening in the whole healthcare industry to treat chronic, not only chronic diseases, but also really serious special diseases, I think is going to be exciting. And we are at the table to be able to start influencing how that rolls out.
That's a lot to take in, but I'm glad that you said that. And you know, you're one of the first that has really brought up value-based care in recent days. And I think that will be helpful for some of the listeners today to understand what that is in contrast to what we've been operating under this fee-for-service model for so many years. Would you be able to define for that what value-based care is for the audience?
Sure. And I can tell from it from different perspectives. So prior to my joining UC Health, I was with Kaiser Permanente and I was the chief pharmacy officer for the Renational program. And as part of that, the Kaiser is the payer, the provider, and it's the pharmacy. So it's all integrated. So the ability to drive value in that scenario is very easy because you've got all of your aligned resources under one roof. In today's environment, at least with UC Health, you've got payers that are insurance companies. They're very different from what the provider is. So patients can actually select their providers, but their payer, the provider, and the pharmacy could be three different entities. So value-based care is an attempt to try to align that and bring it under a fact that if a payer is paying for care, how do they know that care is actually being provided in the most outcome-based manner that'll actually start providing not only patient outcomes, but reduce costs to the payer. So actually, especially when you're giving an expensive drug, think about the fact that you're diagnosed with an oncology condition, you're funding a drug that could be thousands of dollars a month. But if that patient isn't taking it, or there's a drug interaction, or you know it's not optimized on the dosing side, you're basically just spinning your wheels because you're not leading to anything that's actually going to improve their health. So how do you make sure that you put in metrics that the providers and the health systems can actually provide back to you, that you can show that the care is being done outcome-based, it's also quality, and it's safe. So those are things that as a payer, they've integrated some of these. CMS has actually done that as well with some of their Medicare plans. And how do they know? It's all about making sure that the money you're spending in healthcare, given the rising costs, is leading to the outcome that you actually intend it to have.
And thank you for doing that, Amy. I have conversations with other practitioners, one in particular who's my dad for 50 plus years. And he is still a fee-for-service guy, just because that's how he operated for so many years. And explaining to him where we are today in terms of costs and outcomes, it's sometimes an interesting conversation at the dinner table. But I'm glad that you brought that up. We'll be right back after this short break. Amy, let's shift a little bit here. Let's talk a little bit more about you now. You've had this beautiful arc of a career, and I was taking a look at some of the things that you've had an opportunity to do and lead and be a part of. Obviously, today, you're the Vice President of Pharmacy and Chief Pharmacy Officer at UC Health. Prior to this, as you mentioned, you were a Senior Vice President and Chief Pharmacy Officer at Kaiser Permanente. You've served as a Chief Pharmacy Officer at Los Angeles County Department of Health Services. And somewhere mixed in all of this, you have also served in several leadership roles, particularly as the president of the California Board of Pharmacy. You've served as multiple associate and adjunct professors at the University of Colorado Skaggs School of Pharmacy, Chapman University School of Pharmacy, University of Southern California. The list goes on and on. And I'm always curious, whenever I see an individual that is at a level that is as high as it is for you today, like I'm sure that when you were working at Kaiser Permanente, you have had, you know, a great opportunity. You were, I'm sure, were very happy. And then all of a sudden, this position shows up on your radar and you kind of think, well, you know, why would I say yes? Like, what are the reasons that I would want to leave this home that I've built here at Kaiser Permanente and go out and venture into the unknown? Like, I know sometimes a lot of people just seem to think it's a natural progression that you just move, you know, in here, there. But, you know, I always like to understand a little bit about the nuances that maybe went into your thought, your thought process, maybe some factors that aren't as obvious to the listeners today that maybe you would like to share about. You know, I wasn't quite sure, so I had to ask this question, or I had to kind of weigh the pros and cons.
I think for me, it's all about the patients. So how do I have an impact on patients? If you noticed in my history, most of my career was with the Los Angeles County Department of Health Services. And if you read about that organization, it is focused on the patients that are underserved. So their patient mix is essentially Medicaid, and they probably were, before even the Medicare Modernization Act, they were the first to provide uninsured care. So a patient, regardless of ability to pay, gets treated the same as everyone else. And that has, given my background in pharmacy, that was where I found the most benefit or value to me personally as a pharmacist. I started out as a clinical pharmacist. When I graduated from USC School of Pharmacy, I went out there and say, I'm going to be a clinical pharmacist. I'm going to use all my clinical skills. I did not have leadership in mind. That was not something that I immediately thought of. So I became a clinical pharmacist. I became a pediatric clinical pharmacist. So I worked in neonatal ICU, and a really exciting field, and able to direct and deal with patients one-on-one and improve their care. And as a result of that, someone had contacted me and said, do you want to be pharmacy supervisor? It was a neighboring LA County hospital. And they had recognized, this was just 2 years in, that I have the potential to be a leader. And I thought to myself, well, I can, the whole role for me has been, I can influence one patient at a time when I am a clinical pharmacist. As I become a supervisor, maybe that becomes one to many. And as I progressed along my leadership journey, I realized that I could actually impact more patients. Because I could set policies, I could support efforts, and I could have more of an impact. And given my background as an immigrant to the United States, I actually was, couldn't speak English until I was 6 years old. So I'm actually was monolingual Spanish until I was six, and I went to first grade, and the teacher basically said, we're going to have to teach you English. You're going to have to learn. In fact, that's funny. My parents were told that I may have developmental disabilities because I could not speak the language. Oh, wow. So learning, and that still stays with me even after all these years. And I really sympathize with people that have to learn this language and come from another culture. But I do think that cultural aspects makes me a better leader because I could understand the cultural components that go into being an uninsured individual, having to face the challenges of how do you get access to care. So I think I bring that to the table in my role. My mother was a pharmacist, so that's how I got the profession. So she, as soon as I could reach a counter, I was typing labels and working in her pharmacy. and she didn't own one, but she worked in a variety of one. And a lot of them were in underserved communities. So I would see the struggle that patients had in terms of affording medication. Mm-hmm. I remember this one day where I was working at the counter and a gentleman had to buy some antibiotics for his daughter, found out how much it was, couldn't afford it. He said, I'll be back. And I went on a break and I saw him selling his watch around the corner. So patients accessing medication is a very important factor. And sometimes they don't tell you. Sometimes patients don't have, they're prideful, or they just don't want to say, I'm cutting my tablets in half, I can't afford it. And sometimes you have to know to ask those questions. So in getting back to my to the leadership journey and what I when I decided to become a chief pharmacy officer, and all my early leadership positions, someone had actually reached out to me and said, "Hey, you would be good for this position." They recognized that. And I try to remember to do that myself now with my leaders. When I recognize someone that actually has potential, and I will say, you know, maybe let's give you a stretch assignment. Let's get you in a position where you could actually try and see if you like being a leader, because it's not for everybody, but there are abilities to really make an impact over time. So I think it's just the ability to, someone asked me to be on the board of pharmacy. That wasn't something I applied for. Would you like to be on the board of pharmacy? So I started out and I did 6 years on the board and I became president for the past three, and realized that I could make an impact on Californians by maybe impacting regulations. When I was board president, we actually had the first regulation for advanced practice pharmacy license was enacted while I was the president of the California Board of Pharmacy, which was a pretty novel reg in the United States to be able to do that. The Board of Pharmacy also allowed me to see the underbelly of pharmacy because it also does discipline. So the things that happen in the diversions that occur in different pharmacies, you get to see that firsthand, and those 5% of pharmacies that get in trouble. So I'm currently and I always like to give back to the community in any a position. And that's one of the things I did with the California Board of Pharmacy. And now I'm on the Prescription Drug Affordability Board for the state of Colorado. And I'm one of five public members where we are looking at ways to improve access to patients for medications and affordability of medications. So it's exciting to be part of that as well, and being at the forefront of doing everything I can to really start getting back to my passion, which is how do I improve care?
That is
coming to UC Health, and I've done this, my three jobs that I've actually had been chief pharmacy officer. To me, it's about innovation. It's about disruption. It's about turning the ship so that the resources are being used to really drive patient outcomes.
So what was it about UC Health that you said yes to? I mean, again, you know, this was an opportunity, and you said that you've moved there, right? So you had to move from a different location. Did you move from, where were you before residing in? And then tell us a little bit about the opportunity that was presented and why you said yes to this.
Most of my career has been in California. So think about in sunny weather. So that's why I was making the remarks about the snow earlier. It took a little getting used to driving in the snow and being used to the weather, but it's just an amazing state. I think it's the people here at UC Health. It's the focus and the mission and the vision about how to improve health for Colorado citizens. And the fact that I had the opportunity to be the first to be in a new position, to be able to do what I like to do, which is to innovate and start driving change so that we can improve the outcome for patients. And I think the last 2 years, I've done a lot of that. I still have more to do. So every day is exciting. I love the people I work with and the teams, and also the teams that report to me. I've got amazing clinicians. I tell everybody all the time that the pharmacists that I work with here at UC Health are probably second to none, the most amazing clinicians that I've ever worked with. The ability to start driving those talents in to start really improving outcomes, to me, is exciting.
So the culture and the creativity was a strong factor, but once you got there, you saw how amazing the clinicians were and you were like, yes, very, very nice.
And getting back to healthcare, to being my previous role, I was more in an administrative role. I think now I'm getting back to the same role I was similar before, where I spent most of my career. The 30 years at LA County was really focused on how do I have an impact to the patients? How can I see that tangibly?
Amy, you know, I always ask this question because I know that people that are in, you know, leadership roles and that are successful throughout their career really are a product of other people. Other people have helped them along the way. They've either educated them, mentored them, you know, kicked down doors and said, here's an opportunity, and shoved you through that door. You know, is there an individual or two that you'd like to thank on the show today that really maybe not is not even aware of the impact that they've had on your career? And tell us a little bit about who that person is and about what they've done for you that's helped you become the success that you are today.
I have been very fortunate to have had some amazing mentors in my career. And it says you stand on the shoulders of others. And I think that's what I've been able to do. Early in my career, when I recognized that I was a pharmacist, and someone actually had sought me out for a leadership role, and it was a pharmacy director at one of our neighboring hospitals. His name was Ben Margolis. Amazing mentor, just really found ways to help expose me to different parts of pharmacy. He was a pharmacist and an attorney, so very driven on trying to improve care for patients. And I learned a lot from him. Later on in my career, when I was at LA County, I also had the pleasure of working with Mitch Katz. He was the director of health services for the Los Angeles County Department of Health Services. He's currently the lead for the New York public hospital system. So LA County is the second largest public health system in the country. New York is the first. So what I learned from him, he really focused on how do we use, being a county organization, you've got limited resources. How do we use those resources to start driving the best outcome for our patients who are underserved? And the focus that he had, and no idea was too small. It was like, what do you think? And he listened. He actually said, there's several things we did when I was there. One of them, which I was the most proud of, is we had a number of community clinics in the community that did not have access to pharmacy care. So it was about 100 clinics that how the patients got their medication is the physician would walk into the med room and say, okay, what do we have today? What are the samples, right? So I might get one hypertension med one day and another one the next. So I put myself on call to see what these patients, when they called in on the weekends, and I still remember these cases where patients were, someone broke into my car and I don't no longer have insulin. I don't have access to a pharmacy. So, because the clinic's closed. So I worked with our leadership there and with Dr. Katz on how do we start identifying a way to give access to these patients. So we created a network where all of the patients there had access to pharmacy care. We utilized some of the 340B access to pricing that they had, brought that into a PBM, and we managed a pharmacy benefit for those patients. So now those patients could go to a pharmacy, they could get their meds refilled. It was just exciting to see the impact that had to patients.
That's a phenomenal story, Amy, and congrats on sharing at least those individuals that have really showed you a variety of a different way of looking at things and then really moving the needle forward in that space. Amy, what's next for you? Like you've been at this role now for 2 years. You've been instrumental in making and bringing in a lot of change. You know, what other, you know, mountain are you looking to climb so that if we ever connect in 2025, you'll be able to say, Iqbal, on your show, I said I was really looking to do this. What does that this look like? Is there something, a new initiative at UC Health? Is it starting something new? Is it adding something to your, you know, educational or experience? What does that look like?
There's so much still here to do at UC Health. I mean, 2 years in, you know, you say it takes a few years just to even get acclimated. So I think it's just furthering the mission. Again, it's a young health system. There's so much to do to improve care. I think one of the areas that I'm really focusing on that is a gap for us is ambulatory services. So how do we get those patients to get access to more pharmacy care without having them before they get to the hospital? So how do we start influencing patients at that level? So we're looking at programs right now. I'm working with our chief medical officer at ways to open access to clinical services for patients in the ambulatory care space. Because of the young health system, the way it came together, it's very inpatient hospital focused. So we want to probably expand that and start working at outcomes to prevent hospitalizations. The other thing is just growing my young leaders to get them to their next level. I love being a mentor. I had someone that I just was mentoring for a number of years, just became vice president at a large organization, a couple of them that I've been mentoring for a number of years. To me, that's so exciting to be able to provide something that they grow and that there's such just confidence in them that they can actually raise to the next level. So I think that is probably another area that I would like to focus on in the next few years is getting them to that next level so that when I do leave eventually, I mean, no one stays in a job forever, they will actually help continue. So it's basically you've put your imprint and you've provided impact on the organization over time.
You know, there's a certain amount of pride that comes whenever you see, and, you know, you can call what you want. Some people call them, you know, your babies because like you like developed them at a certain point. And now you see that their leadership journey has like blossomed and then they take flight. There is a lot of pride that comes in that. And I'm glad to hear that that's a priority for you. So when you think about some of the resources that you share, right, you yourself as a mentor is a resource, and they, I'm sure, obviously turn to you and probably rely on you for a lot of guidance and support and also in guidance, support, and advice. But there's also, you know, other external resources that I'm sure you use for your own leadership development and that you share with others. You mentioned the ASHP certification and being a part of the inaugural class. I don't know if everybody would be available for that, but there are lots of books and videos and speakers out there. Is there one or two in particular that you rely on for yourself and that you've shared with your team? And what was the impact that it had on you, and why do you share it with others?
I am an avid learner, so I'm always reading a lot of different books. I think one of the ones that's probably been the most influential for me recently is Brené Brown. Mm-hmm. She's an amazing insight into leadership, into how do you make an impact on your leaders and how do you listen to them. There's a concept that she has called paint it done, which I really am trying to use it. So it says, sometimes I may say to one of my firm assists, I want you to work on this report, but it doesn't really tell them enough details to be able to say, this is how I want, how it needs to be. So being more definitive in your requests. And sometimes as leaders, we forget to do that. I think that's one. And amazing, the other one I've really enjoyed so much is Ted Lasso. I don't know if you've ever watched it on Apple TV. He has got some amazing insight into leadership and being curious and listening and making sure that you have, in his leadership journey, he sometimes doesn't appear to be a true leader, but he does it in a very different way, but it actually achieves the outcomes that really need to happen in terms of making people believe and having them work together. So I guess those are the two that I'm really leaning towards right now. But that'll change next year because I'll find someone else.
Well, that's okay. But I mean, Ted Lasso, I've seen clips of, his little, from the show on TikTok and a couple of things. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's pretty insightful. I just, what was it on season three now?
Yeah.
So this is like, and I don't have Apple TV yet. So it's probably that in Prime that I really need to put on my list, but I'm still going through Hulu and Netflix. I don't know if I'll find anybody that's a leadership idol on those guys as well. But Ted Lasso is someone I will have to add to that list. I've certainly read a few of Brené Brown's insights and articles and books. And so I'm glad that you brought that up. Amy, when you meet somebody, right, I'm sure that either at a conference, at a meeting, there's probably a time or two where you will stop and you will say, this is an individual that really brings a lot to the table. And whether they would come to join me on my team or a colleague somewhere at UC Health, we really need to make space for this person. What are three qualities that you look for in that person where you recognize that this is a high value candidate or a high value employee that really needs to be highlighted and brought into the fold? Are there certain things that you look for and how do you catalog them?
I think I would say their drive, the ability to really focus and make change and drive change and really support the organization is one. I think passion too, because I do believe if you are doing something that you're passionate about, you're going to be a lot more successful. So somebody really wants to be a leader and have the ability to reach out and say, I need some support. Because I think you can teach anybody anything. As long as they've got the core value that they want to learn, they have a drive to learn. And I think the third one is just really wanting to make a difference. What are the things that this is somebody, wow, I know that they're going to be, and I have several leaders like that right now that I'm mentoring, but I know that in a few years, you just give them time and growth. And they are just going to make such a difference in the organization as well as to the profession of pharmacy. And pharmacy needs more leaders. So looking for ways to kind of grow that and have my ability to help support that is exciting.
I love that. Thanks for that, Amy. We've talked about a lot of different things over the last hour or so, and I'm really grateful that you said yes and that you were able to share some of your insights on the show. Is there any piece of advice that you would share with my listeners today? Anything that we haven't covered that you think is important as a takeaway? It could be, related to the field of pharmacy or the profession of our profession. It could be related to the future of healthcare. It could be related to anything. But I always like my guests to be able to share something that maybe we haven't discussed yet that you think is important for people to remember and act on.
I would say a couple of things. First of all, is find what you really deep down inside are passionate about. So many of us are in jobs where we are just there 9 to 5, but it's not our passion. Find that passion, because that's going to just help drive your career wherever it may be. That's one. The other one I think is, don't ever be afraid of having a difficult situation come upon you. Sometimes it is in difficult situations that you learn the most. So putting yourself into a challenging position, having an opportunity to face a challenging task, you learn so much for that. And sometimes don't beat yourself up. It's not always going to go right. But even if it doesn't, you're going to learn from it. So do not be afraid of difficulty and challenge, because in my career, the things I've found the most growth has been those times when I have faced those challenges. So that would be what I would recommend to anybody that is in a professional role.
Amy, I appreciate that. And you are 100% right. Outside of your comfort zone, that is where growth and success lies. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that. And Amy, I appreciate you being on the show. I've learned a lot in our conversation today. Absolutely wishing you nothing but success in the remainder of 2023 and for years to come. And looking forward to continue to seeing you take healthcare to a higher level.
Thank you, Iqbal. It's a pleasure.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Healthcare and Hire podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow and subscribe for more. I'm your host, Iqbal Acha, and I invite you to connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Let me know what you thought about this episode or my show in general. Also, visit me at www.achainternational.com to learn more about how I help healthcare professionals and healthcare leaders advance their career, build a better brand, and create a leadership legacy. I'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, let's keep working to take healthcare to a higher level.